Hello, and welcome to Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. With Databook, we talk to healthcare leaders about technology, innovation, and the transformation of healthcare. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll get started in just a moment. Medical debt is an enormous problem. More than half of all U.S. adults have gone into debt because of medical or dental bills. In our latest episode of the Databook podcast, we talk with Ryan Natsky, Chief Revenue Officer of Sphere. Sphere is a technology company that works with health organizations on patient billing systems. Ryan discussed the difficulties for patients and the challenges for providers, and we talked about how health systems can pay the bills without leaving their patients with catastrophic debt. So thank you for joining us. We are talking today with Ryan Natsky, the Chief Revenue Officer of Sphere. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Ron. Happy to be here.
Okay, well, let's dive right in. I wanted to talk about medical debt because it's obviously a topic that's gaining a lot of attention nationally. Some patients have been left with enormous bills that have wrecked their finances. Just from your perspective, how big a problem is medical debt?
I mean, it's a really big problem. So ONC just released a new document for the social determinants of health, and the number one listing they had on there of social determinants of health is economic stability. And when you look at the numbers, medical debt is the largest overall contributor to personal debt. So it's a huge factor that's kind of driving a whole lot of things. And at the end of the day, money drives your ability to do things like have transportation or be able to care for yourself, your family, put food on the table, pay your utilities. And if a big chunk of that is being spent towards medical debt or outstanding medical bills, then that's taking away for some other areas.
And it's amazing just to see the size of some bills that some patients have been struggling with. I know Kaiser Foundation said, I think a quarter of adults have a health care debt of more than $5,000. I mean, we're not just talking about they owe a few hundred dollars to pay up a bill. We're talking in some cases, thousands and thousands of dollars. Is this something you could almost describe as a social determinant of health?
I would argue yes. I mean, if economic stability is a social determinant of health, then I would argue that medical debt, it plays a big part in that. Just for the numbers that we just talked about, it's a really big number. And I always think about, I think it was a study by Personal Capital Health and Wellness last year. And they said that 47% of Americans can't afford an unexpected $500 expense without worry. So if the average medical debt is more than $5,000 for a household, I would argue that also the majority of medical debt is unexpected. You're not really necessarily budgeting for it. Nobody's planning on getting sick. Nobody's planning on maxing out their deductible when they're signing up for a high deductible health plan. So when you look at this typically unexpected amount, that's so much significantly more than what people can typically afford. It's going to have a massive impact on the rest of the social determinant of health and the ability of getting quality care and being able to take care of yourself.
And medical debt's been an issue for a while, but why do you think it seems to be gaining more attention now?
Well, I think in the last 15 years or so, I mean, so when high deductible health plans became more common 10, 15 years ago, we saw deductibles going exceeding 5,000, exceeding 10,000 in some cases. So a big part of it is plan design. A bigger portion of the US population is on high deductible health plans than ever has before, and it continues to go up. So I think that's a big reason why it's becoming such a big issue. And then also, when you think about the impact to the provider side, maybe, again, 15 years ago, maybe 5, 10% of their revenue was from the patient. Now that's 15, 20, 25% in some cases. So it's also, there's also a bigger light on it just from the economics of the provider side as well, because they've got to collect that. They've got to keep their own lights on. They've got to pay their own staff. So having their attention also on being able to collect, looking at these numbers is becoming more and more important and helping have a bigger light on this and more people talking about it.
Obviously, hospitals are in a tough spot because they don't want to leave patients with crippling debt, but they have to sustain their operations to provide patient care. What are some steps that hospitals can do to strike that balance of making sure they're paying their own bills and expenses, but also helping patients avoid really traumatic debt?
Yeah, and I think some good strides in the last couple of years is, I think the attention has gone on the practice of maybe having providers in your facilities that aren't covered by the same insurance plans as the facility is. So if your anesthesiologist or your emergency medical provider is not part of your insurance, but that hospital is, it puts patients in an awkward spot where they think, like my insurance covers this hospital. Yeah, but it doesn't cover this doctor. It doesn't cover this provider. It doesn't cover this portion of your care. And now all of a sudden that number that you owe is significantly more because your insurance isn't going to help cover that. So I think helping make sure that anybody who provides care under your roof in your facility is covered by the same insurance as your facility is a great first start, because it allows for the health plans, the insurance companies, to actually cover care in a lot of cases. I would also say that transparency, I know, I think it previously, Joe from R1 was on this podcast and talked a lot about transparency being a big help. A lot of this is unplanned expenses, especially for hospitals. So as much as we can be more transparent in terms of this is what it's going to cost, this is why you owe what you owe, and it allows you to at least start budgeting for it, at least start planning for it. You can't plan for something you don't know. And that, I keep coming back to that $500 expense number. That's not a lot, especially if your deductible is 10 times that, 20 times that. So if you can help understand, all right, this is a $300 expense versus a $100 expense or a $1,000 expense, that is a really meaningful difference for a lot of people out there. So just giving them that guidance that they can plan ahead, maybe even talk to them about getting on a payment plan. How are you going to cover this? Do we need to be really flexible and help them out there? Because at the end of the day, if somebody just gets a $5,000 bill, they're just shocked, right? Like, I can't pay this. It's over. I might as well just throw it in the trash and just not answer my phone. But it's better to get $1,000 out of that patient, even if it's over 4 months or 6 months or whatever that timeline is, than to get nothing and try to meet that patient partway.
Well, you talked about flexibility and payments. Do you see hospitals and health systems taking more flexible approaches in payments in light of some of the debts that some patients have had? Is that something that they are more apt to do now than maybe they would have done a few years back?
I think so. And there's been the math works out, right? It's like I was just saying, it's better to collect $1,000 over zero. So I think maintaining that relationship with the patient, being flexible with them, it helps the bottom line because it helps the dollars come in the door. But I think health systems are also seeing that getting this resolved and getting a path with the patient is also better for their own care. Because if you have a big outstanding balance due and you don't have a plan to pay it, maybe you're not going to show up to your preventative care appointment. And you're going to catch that later. And now all of a sudden you're using even more expensive means of care. You're showing up to the ED instead of through the clinic. So it kind of has this cascading effect of if you're not showing up to the right kinds of care, now all of a sudden you're showing up to more expensive, higher acuity care methods, that it just makes that problem even worse for both the provider and the patient. So the earlier you can take that on, get everybody on the same page, can hopefully help making it contained and not even worse in the next year, 3 years, 5 years.
I wanted to go back to what you were talking about with transparency, because after getting a lot more attention in healthcare, the government's been pushing hospitals to be more transparent with their prices and allowing consumers to compare prices. How are hospitals doing on that end? Because the CMS is saying that hospitals are making some real progress in complying with the transparency laws, but you still hear patient advocates saying it's not that easy to find information on prices. I mean, how would you assess the progress of hospitals and price transparency?
I think we're off to a good start. I think there's a lot of work to do. I would agree that, hey, putting something in a machine-readable format on the website to your average patient isn't going to be terribly helpful for them. So I think there's the letter of the law and the letter of regulations say, hey, you have to do this, you have to post this stuff, is, again, a good first step, because you can't start building tools around this. You can't start building transparency things around unless you have the data. So at least it's being posted, at least it's being shared. But I think taking that next step of, instead of saying, oh, it's here, go find it on the website, or we'll give somebody an estimate if they call in, being more proactive. How can we make it an expectation that when you schedule an appointment, potentially, that you'll get an estimate right there that is custom to your payment, to your health plan, or where you are with your deductible, or when you check in, provide them with an estimate. So I think changing the model from being a, hey, yeah, we'll provide it if we're asked to it, to, hey, we proactively give this to every patient coming in our facility where we can, is probably where this is going to ultimately go, and whether that's a year, 3 years, 5 years, or more. But I do think that there are some healthcare providers that are doing a really, really good job at that and providing that estimate and being leaders. And I think that the data shows that the patients have a better experience when they have that transparent information. They can plan better for it, and they ultimately leave their doctors better reviews. They leave the providers better reviews. And in a time when there's more choice than ever of where you're getting care, having that good relationship, having a good experience goes a long way to being a loyal patient to that tech care provider.
You talked about consumers having more choices than ever before. Do you see consumers getting more choosy when it comes to healthcare? Because I know I've talked to advocates for consumers that talk about patients who would spend a lot of time shopping for a new car, or even like checking Yelp reviews for best restaurants to take some family for a special occasion, aren't necessarily taking that same approach to healthcare. But do you see that that's starting to change? Are consumers starting to shop around a little bit more when it comes to healthcare?
In some cases, I think a really common example that I've seen is maybe you need a referral for an imaging study. So you need an MRI. And you know you have a really big deductible, it doesn't really matter where you're going to get it from. So maybe you can go online and shop around a little bit there. I would also say that I think Amazon is probably, like, they're helping drive this, right? With some of the virtual care stuff that they're providing is kind of an add-on to a Prime subscription. I know Amazon's been kind of up and down in terms of their ability to impact care delivery, but I think that's stuff like that is where it's going to start getting people thinking about it. Be like, oh wait, I don't have to go to my provider. I can get this from Amazon. I can go over here. I also saw at one of the recent conferences, I think it was the health conference towards the end of last year, I was surprised at how many booths there were for telehealth care that is specialty specific, whether it's men's health, women's health, whatever it is, where people can say, I want to find a provider that's really about my care conditions. Maybe it's like chronic illness or specific to them, and searching out for somebody that finds them. If you need, especially if you're in a rural area, you might not have the specialty care for somebody like you within an hour or 2 hours from you. So being able to search out for that. To your point, I think it's starting. I don't think everybody's doing it, but I think the groundwork is being laid for more and more and more of that being more common.
Well, you talked about how hospitals, in some cases, are following the letter of the law when it comes to price transparency, but aren't really making information as easily digestible or accessible as they could. What technological solutions are out there to help hospitals navigate, help patients navigate prices, get a sense of what things are going to cost before they have to make decisions on care?
Well, the thing about healthcare and providing cost transparency is it's really hard. I mean, you're covering patients with a whole bunch of different care plans. Your copay might be different than mine. Your coinsurance might be different than mine. You're probably a different spot in your deductible. So it's not as straightforward as a contractor saying, this is how much it's going to cost to build your new deck or redo your bathroom, because your cost is different than my cost and the next person that comes down there. So I do think that there are tools to do some real-time eligibility checks and be able to look up, hey, where is Ron in his deductible? Where is Ryan? And be able to turn that around and provide that information. And having the tools to do that in an automated fashion is also important. There's a lot of patients coming through the door every single day. There's a lot of appointments. If you're going to be proactively doing that, you can't have a person behind in the back office calling everybody and looking this up manually. It's got to be done at scale with an integration to the Chargemaster and the EHR, connections to the health plans themselves and all the health plans that are covered within your facility, to be able to bring everything together and provide that customized not quote, but estimate for what the expected care is going to be.
And I think you were touching on this, but just to expand a little bit, what about technology tools that could help hospitals and patients with medical debt? Because it would certainly be helpful if you can show a patient, hey, given your income and the expected cost of your procedures or your care, there's a good chance you're going to be heading towards some debt. Are there tools that can kind of help estimate debt and can help kind of help patients see that they're going to need to do some planning or maybe even start setting up those plans in advance to kind of have more flexible payment options?
Yeah. So doing some propensity to pay scoring and understanding, hey, that whether this patient, hey, if we give them $1,000 bill, they're going to be able to pay it. They're just going to do it. Let's just send them the bill. This patient, they can owe $200 a month. Let's just proactively put them on this plan and not wait for them to call or wait for them to miss a payment. Let's get them going on that. So there absolutely are tools doing it. I think if you look a while ago and the basic look at a credit score and kind of gauge from there, but there's a lot more than that now. You can take in all sorts of information. When you think of all the big data and AI buzzwords around healthcare data, this is an area where it is working and it is being applied today to pull in all these data sources and say, hey, this is how much we think this patient can afford. Let's proactively go out and do that and get them going on something that is going to be fair to them, fair to us, and also to get them on the right track.
Are there some groups that are especially vulnerable to medical debt? Because obviously, you know, seniors sometimes when they're no longer working have issues, but then they at least have some safety nets with Medicare or Medicaid, depending on thing. Is it seniors that are more advantaged, or is it sometimes the younger families that haven't really gotten to the point in their careers where they're earning a lot yet, but they've got some pretty big bills because they've got kiddos and school and stuff? I mean, are there groups that are especially at risk of the fallout of crushing medical debt?
I think the data that I've seen, it's very related to other disadvantaged populations for other areas of social determinants of health. So I think there was one study that had the African-American community had the highest rate of medical indebtedness compared to other demographics. So I think there's demographic groupings of populations that have a higher rate of debt than others. And it is kind of related to the other ones. So it's unfortunately areas that are already lower income in many cases that have a higher amount of medical debt. So it's impacting the people that kind of need it the least, not that anybody needs it, but you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So it really seems like as much as anything else, this is a health equity issue when it comes to medical debt.
Yeah. And I would definitely agree with that, where and if you have the medical debt, and if you're in an area where maybe you don't have a car, maybe you need to rely on public transportation, maybe you need to take off of work to go to your appointments and things like that. That those are, again, going back to what we were talking about before of the preventative care and more scheduled stuff, maybe you're not doing that because you can't take off of work, or you're the primary caregiver for somebody else in your household. You don't want to leave them alone. So you have to work, or you don't have a car, and now all of a sudden you're showing up in the ED and now you have a $1,500 bill instead of a $50 copay. And it just kind of cascades from there.
So what advice would you offer to healthcare leaders that are looking at the serious problem of medical debt, wanting to do more, but maybe aren't sure how to go about it?
I think the top thing on my mind is really the transparency piece of it, is how do we proactively communicate what somebody owes and why, and how early in the process can we do this? At the end of the day, you can't plan for something you don't really know what it's going to be. So giving patients as much information as possible for them to make the best decisions for them and their family, and the people within their household to be able to go into that appointment knowing it's going to cost this amount and I'm already set up on a payment plan, or I already have been talking to a financial counselor who's being flexible with me. So I think the transparency, proactive communication, and really having that empathetic conversation to say, you know what, this patient just really, the $5,000 bill that we're about to send them, it's just a non-starter. It's going to cause more stress and anxiety and actually just get us off on the wrong foot how do we get this course corrected before the sticker shock of this bill that comes potentially weeks or months after care is being delivered.
So it seems like there's certainly a role for maybe more technology and even automation in some areas in terms of cost projections or debt projections, but you're still going to need that human element that can really work with the patient and guide them along with really understanding what they're looking at and coming up with some plans together that can help them get through the expensive part of their healthcare journey, which is also the really thing that we're focusing on. Like if you're battling cancer, you're concerned about the cost. You're more concerned about surviving the cancer. So that's the trick, part of like balancing all this while somebody's very preoccupied with either their own healthcare journey or their loved one's healthcare journey.
Absolutely. It has to be both. We can't treat like somebody, if you have high medical debt, there's a very good chance that it is not the best time of your life. You're going through something very, very challenging. And to treat every patient as a number, only communicate with automated messages, send them through a phone tree of 9,000 calls and never getting a person and being on hold for half an hour. It's not the right way to treat patients, especially when they're going through this sort of stuff, but also you need to be able to scale it. So making sure that you have the technology tools so that your staff are spending their time with the right patients that really need it the most, and balancing it with the scale of the technology and the automated engagement that we can have there. There's more and more patient, again, if you go to any of these conferences, every other booth says patient engagement on it, and it all means a little bit of a different thing. But every time you have a touch point with a patient is an opportunity to have an empathetic hand of care, of being understanding where they are, educate the patient, guide them in the right direction. So whether it's at the point of scheduling or an appointment reminder or something to check in or their after visit summary or anything after the fact, it's an opportunity to not just maybe deliver patient education or do the specific thing you're going for, but making everything available to the patient so that they can understand the continuity and the comprehensiveness of everything going on with their care.
What can smaller hospitals or health systems do? Because some obviously smaller hospitals don't have the resources of a large hospital chain. What advice would you offer leaders of smaller systems?
I definitely agree that they don't have the same resources and maybe they don't have the same IT budget. But I would say that the companies out there that are providing tools to help with this, they should be able to scale up or down. It shouldn't just be the Mayos and Intermountains of the world that should be able to provide this sort of care. So the technology tools, and the great thing about SaaS too, is it can and should scale up and down. So maybe it's not the exact same vendors, or maybe it's not the exact same groups, but care in rural communities, smaller hospitals, independent clinics, there's still companies out there that are providing great tools to be able to give them access and be able to provide great care to their patients and great transparency for their patients.
So, anything else you'd like to see Washington doing? Because obviously there's been talk about different steps to help people out with debt in general and medical debt. What else, if anything, can be done on a regulatory level to help patients dealing with medical debt?
I guess I've been focusing so much on how do we operate as efficiently as possible in the current environment. I mean, it's tough. I mean, we're very unique. There really aren't too many other countries in the world that are set up the way that we are, that have the same sort of medical debt problem. So I just think it's continuing to hear from listen to the patients, listen to the providers, listen to health plans. Because at the end of the day, this big amount of medical debt, it isn't good for anybody. Hospitals don't love having all this money sitting out there uncollected. It's not exciting to give somebody a surprise bill. So I think the incentives are aligned for everybody to come together to say, hey, this is something that we need to do here. What that exact answer is, I'll leave that to the experts to give their recommendations. But I do think that there's obviously room for improvement, and in a big reason why we should take strides into making this better, because getting worse seems like it's already really bad. Getting worse seems really, really scary.
Anything else about this talk? Because I know we're getting near the end of our time together. Anything else that we haven't touched on in terms of the problem of medical debt for patients and for health systems?
I guess the only thing, other thing I can think of is that I do remember maybe not even 10 years ago talking to healthcare providers being like, hey, are you, how are you, are you collecting a down payment? Are you getting a copay? Are at the point of check-in? Are you requiring it? And I did hear from some providers saying like, oh, no, we can't do that. We can't ask our patients for money ahead of time before we give them care. They won't come back, or I'm in a small community and the person behind the front desk knows the patient, things like that. I do think that that mindset has definitely changed. People know that, hey, there will be patient responsibility. We need to, I do need to pay it. But in a lot of cases for patients, they don't pay it, not because they don't want to, it's because it's confusing or it's not meeting them where they are for some of the things that we talked about. So I do think that we're on the right track in terms of setting the expectations around, all right, Ron, you're coming in for an appointment on Thursday. This is how much you're going to owe. I need you to take care of this, or at least get a plan in place for how to pay this. And I don't think that's bad, right? Like, I think that was a little bit of a conversation people were having, uncomfortable having before, where now I think we're in a much better spot, and it is that expectation, and people know that they're going to have to pay and make a plan on that, and they're willing to do that.
Very good. Well, this has been a very informative discussion on what's a big topic in healthcare, and I think it's going to be a big one for quite some time. But Ryan, thanks so much for taking the time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ron. It was great talking to you.
Thank you for joining Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive, a brand of MJH Life Sciences. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. For the latest news, analysis, and insights on healthcare, visit our website, chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can follow us on social media on LinkedIn and Twitter. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Thanks again for joining us. Take care.